Hello, cultists. What's the biggest podcast in the world? Well, it's not us, clearly.
No, it's
Still, we do what we can, and we're here for your listening entertainment. It's the first Tuesday of the month, and once again, we're back with a look at another cult movie. And while it may not have been the one originally scheduled, it's still a classic, in inverted commas. Your mileage may vary. Yes, this time we're taking a rain check on Jake and Elwood as we head into the retro future by way of the 1980s with the 87 Schwarzenegger Paul Michael Glaser adaptation, and I use the term very loosely, of the Richard Bachman Stephen King short story, The Running Man. That's right, just in time for the Edgar Wright Glenn Powell remake, we thought we'd take a look at the 80s original. So stick around and join in. Maybe you'll take home some fabulous prizes, including the Cult Classics Home Edition game. But as always, I'm not alone. I'm joined by three of the best stalkers in podcasting. First up, we have the hunk of chunk, the master of disaster, the guest that dispatches his enemies by use of toy ships and 4K discs. It's the collector. Who loves you and who do you love? It's Mr. Mike Wilson. Welcome, fella.
I live to see you eat my podcast contract, but I hope you leave enough room for my fist because I'm going to ram it into your stomach and break your goddamn spine.
Nice. You suggested this one, buddy. Any particular reason, or was it just because the new one was coming up?
It was because I'd never actually seen it, and I wanted to watch this before watching the Edgar Wright version. You know, I'm a massive Edgar Wright fan, so I was always going to be kind of first in the queue for that one, and I thought I should watch the original. I probably should have read the book as well, but what, you know, what the heck?
Yeah, are you looking forward to this one then? Now you've watched the film, or is it just like,
I
oh,
am.
God, I've got to talk about this.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's, you know, it's going to be an Oscar contender, but it was fun. I'll tell you that one.
Yeah. Next up, this stalker will paint you into a corner before taking out with glee. He's a now longtime maker of guest appearances on the Silver Screen podcast in general. It's the thespian, Mr. John Adams. Hello there, sir.
I'll take you all down. I don't know what that weird accent was.
How are you doing today, John?
I'm very well, thank you. Not well with the impressions, but doing well myself.
And you're no stranger to this movie, I'm guessing, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I grew up with this baby.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm aging myself again.
Now, I should mention, for the benefit of the audience, for any first-time listeners out there, John is an artist who specializes in collage of film and TV shows, and he's very kindly allowed us, I hope he's allowed us anyway, to display his collage for today's movie. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see the kind of good work that John does, and if you're listening on audio, well, tough. But yeah, please check out both his Running Man piece as well as many others on John's Phoenix Photography site. We'll place the link in the description.
Thank you.
No worries. And finally, we know him as the director, but he's with us so much these days, he's rapidly becoming the Captain Freedom of Silver Screen. He's so reliable. It's Mr. Michael Whaley. How are you, man?
Get down, grab my hand. He said we were doing the impression. I'm doing.
I like you have the growl with it.
Yeah. Get to the chopper.
Oh, went off the rails quick, didn't it?
It did, it did. But yeah, thanks for coming to the rescue once again, Whaley.
No problem, man.
Nice. Is this a notable one for you among Schwarzenegger?
Oh yeah, this is. I grew up with this one as well, and it's always been one like I own it. Like I've always thought it was a really fun movie. I've never read the source material though, and so I don't know how much it differs other than hearing Siegel say, "No, it's pretty different."
Nice. So now the contestants are in place. Without further ado, we'll get down to the movie. The Running Man's a 1987 dystopian action film directed by Paul Michael Glaser and starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Maria Conchita Alonso, Richard Dawson, Yaphet Kotto, and Jesse Ventura. The film is set in a dystopian US and featuring a TV show where convicted criminal runners must escape death at the hands of professional killers. It is very loosely based on the 1982 novel written by Stephen King and published under the pseudonym Richard Bachman. However, a later lawsuit determined the movie itself was plagiarized from the 1983 French film Le Prix du Danger, directed by Yves Boisset. The Running Man grossed $38 million on its $27 million budget in the US and opened to mixed reviews from critics, with the movie then going on to be a hit on home media and developing a cult following. A new movie adaptation of the novel, directed by Edgar Wright and starring Glenn Powell in the lead role, is set for release by Paramount Pictures in just a few days. So if this is your type of thing, it'll be on national cinema release from the 7th, I believe. Yeah, now for this one, I don't remember much. I certainly didn't see it at the cinema, if I recall. I wasn't a huge Schwarzenegger fan back then, so his movie sort of passed me by for the most part. I do remember the kids in the school playground talking about it excitedly. So I eventually sorted it out when it was released on video. It was okay. Didn't blow me away exactly, but it was good fun. So what about you guys? Mike, I know that you've not seen this one before watching it for this. So
no.
Yeah. Was it on your radar, though, prior to
this? Oh, yeah. Thing? I mean, I'm a big Stephen King fan. So I kind of knew of it and knew it existed. And I wouldn't say I'm the world's biggest Schwarzenegger fan, but I could get a kick out of watching basically any of his movies. So it's kind of a weird omission, which, like I said, like a lot of that kind of thing, I just wanted to watch it and fill in that gap. And yeah, I would say it's basically what I expected, more or less.
Fair enough. How about you, John? What was your first experience with this one? Any good memories?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't actually a big Schwarzenegger fan back in the day, but my brother was. So I think we saw this probably on HBO, because HBO had not been out that long. And I remember this was running a lot. No pun intended there. So yeah, but I always like science fiction. And so there was that. I love Richard Dawson. So there was that. And I just think it's all of Schwarzenegger's films in this time period are just so quintessential 80s. From everything, from the soundtrack to the costuming, you know, even though it's supposed to be the future. I always love that too. So I think it's a lot of fun. It's kind of, it's ridiculous, but I don't mind ridiculous.
Nice one. Whaley?
It's kind of all the same as everybody else here. It's one that I've always just enjoyed. It's nothing going to blow you away. After rewatching it today, because it's probably been some years doing that, it did strike me that this is where we're going, it seems like, right now. But it's hitting a little too close to home. But yeah, no, it's something I've always enjoyed. I also wasn't a huge Schwarzenegger fan. It wasn't until a little bit later that I started appreciating some more of his stuff. But I was also only, 8 when this came out. It wasn't until I was a teenager, much later, before I started going back and watching all of the stuff like this. I've always enjoyed it. It's ridiculous. I knew there was a lot of bad puns after it, but it seems like there was puns on puns, which is almost too much, but I still made me laugh.
That's right. Well, I mean, I was going to come to you now anyway, Mike, because I normally cover the BTS on these things, but you're doing it for this one. Is that correct? Yeah,
that's fine. I've got quite a lot of information, yeah. As you mentioned, the film is directed by Paul Michael Glaser. You might know him better as Detective Starsky in Starsky and Hutch, wildly enough. Christopher Reeve was once attached to play Ben Richards in this film. LA Weekly stated that the film's tone changed from a dark allegory to a humorous action film with the change of the film's star. With Reeve, The Running Man was about an unemployed man who goes on a violent game show for a 30-day period to feed his family. With Glazer and Schwarzenegger, the protagonist became a condemned but innocent criminal forced into a 3-hour gladiator-style game show by the justice system. When the movie was shown to a test audience, the deepfake technology led them to believe that the two main characters were actually killed. Only later, when Richards and Amber are seen again, did they realize they were still alive. But a producer, it rather typically, claimed the audience would be too stupid to understand what happened and ordered the movie to be edited so everybody knew right away that it was not the real characters that died. Underestimating the audience, even in the 80s. Pop star Paula Abdul choreographed the pre-show dance sequences.
Yeah. Well, that's what she has, did, you know, before she did any pop music. She was a choreographer.
This was her second film credit, although she had already choreographed 4 Janet Jackson videos and videos for ZZ Top, Duran Duran, and Debbie Gibson. The music used for the pre-show entertainment was composed by Jackie Jackson and was dubbed Paula's theme in honor of Paula Abdul. This I found quite amusing. 1 hour, 23 minutes into the film, as Killian is congratulating his production team, he's standing next to a TV that's rolling credits for the show. They are as follows. Thank you, Tim, George, Gary, Paul, Rob, Keith, you, me, us, them. What next? I don't know. Titles, type M wrong. Makeup, paint your face. Props, property. Locations, buy too long here. Art, director, red, G, blur, and primary colors. Music, do re mi. Catering, scene ends. So gibberish, basically. And producers, I just thought that was funny. The producers originally wanted Chuck Woolery to play Damon Killian, but Woolery was unavailable due to his hosting jobs on Love Connection and Scrabble. Arnold Schwarzenegger suggested Richard Dawson play Killian because he and Dawson were close friends, and Schwarzenegger is a fan of Family Feud, which Dawson hosted. The film's release was postponed from summer 1987 to Thanksgiving due to the producer's desire for the film to be the only action thriller released during the holiday season and to avoid the other Schwarzenegger action vehicle Predator. The film opened on 1,600 screens on November the 13th of 1987. On the film's 30th anniversary in 2017, The Running Man was cited by a BBC journalist as having made accurate predictions about life in 2017, including an economic collapse and offering a critique of American television culture. The film's writer, Stephen D'Souza, himself reinforced these predictions in a podcast interview with Vice magazine's Motherboard section. Reed Tucker of the New York Post said in 2019 that the film correctly predicted the widening gap between the rich and the poor, depicting homeless shantytowns and skyscrapers for the wealthy resembling the real New York City and Los Angeles, and societal obsession with reality TV. D'Souza said one of the producers of American Gladiators sold his show with clips from The Running Man, telling the network, "We're doing exactly this, except the murdering part." I can believe it. So, yeah, other than that, I have a couple of things, as we say, when we get to the individual sections, DK, and a little bit, if you want, about the film versus the novel.
I mean, we're going to get straight on to the different characters of the movie now, and obviously the first one's going to be the writing. So with that in mind, I mean, before we proceed, do you want to give anything for the writing? And sure, if you want to go into the differences between this and the novel.
No worries, yeah. I mean, I did think it was interesting. That's the main thing I have for the writing, is the differences. I'll just jump into it. The movie is only loosely based on the book. The book does feature a protagonist named Ben Richards, a totalitarian dystopia, The Running Man being the most popular show and people hunting Ben. But the book takes place in 2025. Oh, dear.
Oh, shit.
Ben is described in the book as scrawny and pre-tubercular, so yeah. Not very funny, Schwarzenegger. His daughter Kathy is gravely ill. His wife Sheila has had to resort to prostitution, and Ben is blacklisted from his trade. He voluntarily goes on a game show to earn money. There are numerous dangerous and deadly game shows, like one where people with heart conditions run on a treadmill for money. He's chosen for The Running Man due to his high test scores. The executive producer is Dan Killian, and the host is named Bobby Thompson. I think those characters basically are combined in the movie.
Yeah.
In The Running Man, the contestant is declared an enemy of the state and released with a brief head start before hunters begin chasing. The contestant earns $100 per hour that they stay alive and avoid capture, an additional $100 for each law enforcement officer or hunter they kill, and a grand prize of $1 billion if they survive for 30 days. Viewers can receive cash rewards by informing the network of the contestant's whereabouts. They can go anywhere in the world, but are given a camera and required to videotape 2 messages a day to mail back to the studio. If they fail to mail a video, they breach the contract, forfeit the money, and will be hunted indefinitely. No one has ever claimed the grand prize, and Ben is simply hoping to live long enough to help his family. Ben tries to use his videos to inform the public about the conditions of the underclass, but the network dubs this over with obscenities and threats, which I guess kind of ties into the deep faking and, you know, editing Schwarzenegger's thing in the movie. Ben makes his way to, of course, Derry, Maine, because it's a Stephen King book, and kidnaps a woman named Amelia Williams. He bluffs his way onto an airplane, meeting lead hunter Evan McCone, and learns that he's not only broken the Running Man's record by 8 days, but that his exploits have inspired the lower class to rise up and fight their oppressors. Killian calls and offers Ben the position of lead hunter, but tells him that an intruder killed his wife and child before he even started the show. Ben accepts the offer, then kills McCone and the flight crew, but is mortally wounded. He lets Amelia parachute to safety, then flies the plane into the Game Network's tower, killing himself and Killian. So, just a bit different.
Yeah.
But hey, the names are the same.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Not even all of them.
Not even all of them, yeah.
So, yeah, with this in mind, with, you know, knowing that it's obviously quite far removed from the original story, what do you think to the writing on this one? And, you know, obviously not just the script, but the dialogue itself.
I found, like Whaley, that there's an awful lot in here that's quite prophetic. Ideas like the actual dialogue truth hasn't been very popular lately. I'm like, yeah. Geez, that could very effectively be a damnation of our times in the last 10 years, really, couldn't it?
And, it's very close to the bone in some occasions. And when obviously when you watch it as a kid, it's cool to see these dystopias. It's not as cool to live in them. Mm. And so when you, I don't know what you guys thought, but when I'm watching it now, it kind of leaves a bit of a sickly feeling in my stomach.
It's the same reason I have trouble watching, even though I loved the movie the last 5 or 6 years, I can't watch Idiocracy. Like,
yeah.
No, I can't either. Because it's not funny anymore.
It's not funny. Like, I mean, this is still fun, but it's like, it is, the writing is a little prophetic. Just, I wonder if this people who wrote on this ever wrote on The Simpsons.
I always think this is a great, like, 16-year-old movie for a person that's 16.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing that's, you know, it's not a message film. It's fun to watch. It looks fun. I mean, it's not well directed, but.
I was going to say, it's weird we say about it kind of accidentally being prophetic and, you know, you may think I'm crazy. As I was watching it, I was like, this is kind of RoboCop light. Like, it's trying to do satire.
It tries it, but it just doesn't have that Verhoeven kind of finish. So,
but like John says, it's not a message movie, so it's not really trying to say anything other than, isn't this weird? And
it's like when it cuts to the advert of the, you know, the other game show where he's climbing the rope.
This, to me, also felt like, with the direction and stuff like that, there were a lot of people having input on the direction. Like, I just think there was just way too many people saying what Shang should be doing, and it affected the directing. That's just what it felt like to me.
Yeah, I know there were a lot of... They had four directors, I think, before they finally hired...
Which means... Blaise. Well, you know what? They hired a TV director because TV directors don't really direct the acting as much... on film. Like, they TV directors get brought in to establish characters a lot of times and things that are already there, and then just run the ship while it's going on there. I didn't know he was the fourth director. Yeah, they wanted that's why they brought in a TV director, is because they wanted somebody that isn't gonna you know, cause a stir and have problems with the lead, who's gonna be there no matter what.
Well, and also you've got the whole thing about, all right, he can come in and do it cheap and fast.
Yeah.
And at that point, they're running out of time. They need somebody to just come in and just shoot it.
To me, it starts off very much wanting to be the Terminator, right down to the opening credits font. It's very...
Oh, it's so 80s, though.
it so wants to be something more heavy. But it's so it feels cheap to the point that halfway through it just thinks, do you know what? We're just going to become an episode of WWE Raw.
I think you're right, though, DK. It's from that era where the wrestlers were their own big celebrities, and you had like Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and those first bunch that became breakout stars and movie stars in their own right and stuff. And
you got Rocky III at this point, which would also be that same kind of feel, period. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't.
That's what it's riffing on, isn't it?
I think really when it comes to like font choice and stuff, that's just marketing. You know, it's like, we're going to make it look really tough, and we want people to think of Terminator because it's Arnold, and you know.
By the way, it was 6 years away from Raw being on TV.
Yeah, so yeah.
Wrestling so was a thing, obviously, but there wasn't a spectacle of TV wrestling.
Cool. So, I mean, we've already touched... We've quite heavily leaned into the direction side of things. So do you have anything with regards to direction, Mike?
Not a lot, but just this one bit of information. In a 2015 interview about the film, Paul Michael Glazer said that he was originally approached to direct the film, but declined because he felt the pre-production period was insufficient. Director Andrew Davis was hired instead, but fired after just 2 weeks because the production was 1 week behind schedule. Glazer was then hired. Schwarzenegger has stated that this was a, quote, terrible decision, as Glazer shot the movie like it was a television show, losing all the deeper themes. Sure. That's all I have about that.
Not sure you can blame it all on the director, but hey, okay.
Yeah. I mean, losing the deeper themes of what Arnold really is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Is there anything with regards to the direction that you guys actually like?
I love all of the game show stuff. I mean, again, it's TV. He shoots that like a game show. It feels very real when it comes to the game show. And I love that part of it. I mean, the rest of it's fine.
It's nothing to write home about, but the rest of it's okay. But yeah, it did, like, the game show stuff was great. It's just when it cut into the arena, that's when it felt like it just was unconnected to a point.
Yeah, I agree. I think it captured a lot of the life stuff of the game show within the actual... you know, the studio audience and the things with Richard Dawson hosting. But when it kind of got to the arena part, it did feel very much we're on a soundstage in the 80s. You know, it didn't really feel super believable. And there's an awful lot of convenient moments, like they ask somebody to choose which runner they wanted, and they choose Sub-Zero. And then I was like, isn't it convenient that then they end up on an ice rink? Like, well, what would they have done if it was anybody else, you know?
It's stuff like that.
Goes to my point with it being somewhat disconnected. Like, they had to get them to the ice rink, so they did that. Why aren't they following them, and how are they letting them run around and find the secret base? And all of these other things. It's just never really explained well. So
It doesn't care about such things, obviously.
I will say I do like the tunnel scenes where, you know, they're shooting through the tunnels.
Yeah,
that's another
that
thing.
Does that look like a damn good ride.
Direction and stuff. That's pretty fun and cool looking.
I know it's down to the budget as well with the effects. I don't like the... When you look at something like Escape from New York and you see that he's got this massive space to cover, it feels like a space. But as you said, Mike, with regards to this, everything feels... It does feel like a soundstage, and it just moves like they're one from one set to another, and it's, oh, we need to find the uplink. Oh, it's just across the street. It feels very... Yeah, Rent-A-Ghost at
Park. Contained, very contained.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that does affect the plot, like John says, because you're at the point where it's like you've got cameras following them, following the chasers or whatever, the runners going after them, and Dynamo almost getting killed and stopped and all of this stuff, and they're following all this action. And then, as you said, the actual uplink isn't that much further away, but they're like, we're not on camera now, people can't see us. Like, why? What? Yeah. It happens to be a blind spot in that area? Like, so that would be the one place you'd want a camera.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of negatives that I never normally do. If it's direction, even if it's standard stuff, it doesn't normally stand out, but this stood out negatively. There's so many things, like really bad overdubbing. Like, it was so obvious that mouths were moving and seeing different things than what had been dubbed in on multiple occasions. And there was one occasion that was so blatant. It was Dynamo was stalking after them, and he's talking away, his mouth's opening like he's speaking, but there isn't any dialogue coming out. And I was like, this is abysmal. You'd think the director would notice that you could clearly see him talking and cover it up better, or at least dub something else in. And I was like, this is awful. This is just terrible. I mean, this is a big budget movie, and he's getting away with some really horrendous amateur mistakes, you know?
I will say this, though. That may not be fully on the director. That's also on the editor and the producers.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Editing-wise. Okay, this is my masterpiece. Let it go and watch it all. That could have been something. There should have been someone else to catch that as well, not just the director.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that's a whole production problem, post-production problem, not just the director. There's a lot of people that are to blame for that.
Did any of you guys feel that any of the stalkers were an actual threat past, oh, they look cool?
I think so. Not? I think there was enough violence kind of in here that I was like, I was able to suspend enough disbelief, and, you know, people are flinging around chainsaws and stuff. But I think the film, to its credit, whether it's script or direction, sets up those stakes very early on, because I didn't expect to see that dude's head explode. So as soon as you see that, I was like, oh, okay, so we're just showing all this stuff. Right.
I'm specifically thinking of, you know, people like Dynamo that turns up, he flashes a bit electric around, then gets in that really crap little, you know, buggy, flips himself over, and becomes, that becomes the most useless asshole on TV.
I mean, Dynamo was basically magic. He was essentially the blooming Big Trouble in Little China character. He's shooting lightning from his fingers and stuff. So you've just got to accept, like, all right, whatever.
Well, I thought it was his suit. I
always figured it was the suit.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. But I mean, at the same time, you can wear a suit with lots of LED lights and stuff on. You're not going to be shooting lightning like the Emperor from Star Wars. Oh. It still defies a little bit of belief that you're like, all right, come on, buddies. Whereas I think the visceralness of the chainsaw
is this one.
Oh, obviously.
So what did you think of the performances? This were any standouts for you? Any people that you thought were, you know, particularly?
I have a couple
great
of bits of info if you want me to start with that.
Yeah, go for it, dude.
Yeah. I had to include this one. Mick's Star Trek reference gag, who's Mr. Spock, was Mick Fleetwood's idea, as he was a huge fan of the original 60s series. This film was in production a year before Next Gen actually started. However, 2 years after this film was released, Fleetwood got to achieve a lifetime ambition by having a cameo in the Next Generation Season 2 episode Manhunt.
Was Mick Fleetwood actually playing himself, supposedly?
It's heavily rumoured that he's playing himself, because he is called Mick. He does mention, oh, you arrested all my friends and destroyed my music.
Exactly. I always assumed he was playing himself in the future, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not officially stated anywhere, but it's a prevailing theory and feasible, I guess.
With regards to the performances in this, any standouts for you?
Standouts for me, I did like, I did think that Maria Conchita Alonso was good. Surprisingly, I liked Jim Brown, who, you know, wasn't an actor. He's a famous football player. Richard Dawson, I think, probably is the best performance in this, even though hindsight, just playing himself. But yeah, no, I'd say those are that. I mean, it's a Schwarzenegger. He did the same thing over and over again. And, you know, that he did for all these years. I mean, some of his performances were great with some things, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
I was going to say the same thing, actually. I mean, not knowing Richard Dawson, I was impressed that it was quite an actor-y performance because I didn't know he had acted before. So I was like, oh, this is really good. And again, I didn't know he was really effectively just portraying himself. I figured he might have been a nicer dude and this was a stretch. But either way, it was a good performance. It was compelling. It's probably the best one in the movie. I also liked Maria Conchita Alonso. I thought she was really good, even though the writing was doing her no favors. I will say one thing I didn't mention about the writing, slightly controversially. There's one too many rape jokes in this. You can really tell it's the 1980s at times. I counted no less than 3 jokes about rape that were not funny. But not so cool. But no, other than that, back to the acting again. Mick Fleetwood's just playing himself, as you said. Schwarzenegger's basically playing the same, you know, action hero cheese ball that he was throughout the 80s. And he's kind of in Batman and Robin mode. I'll just fire a pun out and that'll do. You know, in lieu of any acting, I'll just make a pun. So, which again, that's, if it's his career, fair enough. The only other person I've noted down was that character actor Ken Lerner. I don't know if you know him from anything, but I know him from a load of different things. He appears as the court appointed theatrical agent, which is such a fun idea anyway. And he doesn't have a huge role, but I was like, oh, I know that guy. And he's good in a small role.
I do like, I do think Dawson is a standout. Again, like you, Mike, I had no idea. I didn't know about Hogan's Heroes and stuff. And the only thing I knew him was as a game show host, but it was after the fact of this, and I thought he got the game show gig on the back of this, to be honest. I think he's a really good performer in this. He really does come across like a shit, but, you know, from what everybody's saying, that, you know, that wasn't a stretch for him. As you say, Schwarzenegger is just Schwarzenegger. I feel bad that Yaphet Kotto didn't get that much to do other than, you know, a couple of lines, dead.
Mm. But, he's so good at Alien as well when it was,
I know, yeah, many years ago. I know. And, you know, and you know, even when it comes to things like Live and Let Die and stuff like that. But what about you, John? Any standouts for you?
Oh, gosh, I'm just repeating at this point. Because mine is Richard Dawson by far. So, yeah, I mean, I hate that Yaphet Kotto has nothing to do in this. He's a favorite of mine, or was a favorite of mine, as a character actor.
I do have to give a special shout out to the dude on my avatar, Jesse Ventura. I love him in this. I just love the scenery chewing he pulls.
I read somewhere that when they were filming Predator together, John McTiernan didn't want Ventura and Schwarzenegger in shots together because Ventura was visibly so much bigger than Schwarzenegger, and it just didn't look convincing that he'd be killed before him or whatever. And it's like, yeah, when you watch The Running Man, you can clearly see that Ventura's dwarfing him.
It's stupid. It's probably because, you know, I've seen Predator so much, but every time he turns up on screen, I just think, look, that man's a goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
As he spits tobacco out.
Yeah, but I love the where they try and, you know, update him for the modern audience towards the end, and he just walks in with this armor that's falling off him. It's just ludicrous. I just love it, and I love the fact that he doesn't seem to take it seriously, even when he's doing that workout video at the start. And it's just so pantomime. Yeah, I love it.
Well, what's also great about his performance in this? I love that he plays, he's supposed to be this badass, but he's really become this spoiled softy. Mm. And then they force him to, you know, he's like, I'm not doing that now. You know, I actually kind of love that they had that little twist in there a little bit for him.
Yeah. Because all the time, you know, they've built him up over the course of this movie. And you think he's going to be like the final boss almost.
Yeah.
So when, you know, when he comes in and says, you know, screw this. It kind of, it's one of the few things in the script to me that kind of wrong foot you, and I like that. So has anybody else got anything with regards to the performances, the acting that they haven't brought up yet?
No, I just have music and sound as the next thing.
Yeah, no worries. Well, I mean, we're on to the FX production design now, mate. Have you got anything with regards to this other than, you know, it was done at Poundland?
Basically, yeah. All I've just, I think the one note I have written is, wow, this is 1980s, isn't it? Because it just is. Like I said, I can never get away with it. I know you can't possibly predict, you know, technology and stuff like that, but anytime there's an 80s vision of the future and it has those dodgy Commodore computer graphics, and the, you know, it's just like, oh, come on, really?
I love that it. That's it. What make, well, for me, it's nostalgia.
Yeah.
Honestly, it really is hard for me to look at it and judge it from a more contemporary point of view, because I just think of it as, you know, as, ooh, how cool did all that look then?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
It's a personal preference, I guess, yeah.
I mean, I do like some of the effects in this. I do like the matte painting when they're looking down upon the city. I mean, it's only
I sent you to your Discord, by the way. John sent me a matte painting that's on storage somewhere from The Running Man. I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's at the Academy Museum in Los Angeles, and they've got the matte painting that they use of the city of Los Angeles. They've got that hanging up.
Cool. Yeah, I do like the matte paintings. I don't like the obvious lack of budget. They do try and do okay with it, but it's certainly not, it's not had money thrown at it like you did with Total Recall a couple of years later. Yeah, and the one thing that I don't like, and it's just a minor niggle, but it's just me, when they first cut to the eye view, as if you're looking up at the screen in that city, the video is off kilter.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that. I hate that. It's like they just...
You mean it's hanging slightly off?
Yeah, it's like they just cannot be bothered for the details, and that kind of thing always just makes me wretch.
They probably couldn't be bothered.
Like the theme of this movie, yeah, you know, it's like they again quick and dirty. I think, you know, yeah. I hate that we're tearing this movie apart.
I don't hate it. I mean, yeah.
Well, I don't. It is, well, I'm open.
It's still
open.
Not a great film. It's a fun movie. It's not a great film. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that brings us to sound design. And you say you've got something on this, Mike?
Yeah, because the music is actually quite important to this movie in a weird kind of way. The film's soundtrack was composed by Harold Faltermeyer. You may famously know him for the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack. He's the guy that brought us Axel F and thus is indirectly responsible for the Crazy Frog. But don't hold that against him. Again, Brits will know what I mean. The soundtrack includes the soundtrack includes music by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Richard Wagner, Jackie Jackson, Glenn Barbie, and John Parr, I'm sure you'll know, Man in Motion, etc., who performed the main theme of the film called Restless Heart, brackets Running Away with You, written by John Parr and Harold Faltermeyer, produced by Faltermeyer. An expanded deluxe edition featuring the full score plus source music and previously unreleased alternate cues was released in 2020 by Varese Saraband, who released the original album in 1987 on both CD and vinyl. DK, you're a music collector guy. Have you got hands on the Running Man soundtrack?
I don't, but weirdly enough, I mean, I'm not completely sold on this movie. It's not particularly high, but I love this soundtrack. And I think it's an unrecognized gem from Faltermeyer. As you said, he's well known for Beverly Hills Cop. He's well known for Top Gun from the 80s. I have the soundtrack for Fletch, which is a pretty good one by him. But I think this is a really underrated score, and I think it deserves more recognition.
Cool. Being also an opera singer, wrestler, and actor, Erland van Lith performs in his role as Dynamo, part of the aria, and I'm going to butcher this, Hygia Vinta la Corsa Vedro Mentrio Sospiro, from Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro.
Sure you nailed that.
And I only have one note here that I've written, which is, I spotted the William Tell Overture, which I'm sure people are thrilled to learn.
I've had my say. Mike's had his. I mean, what about you guys? You've got anything to do with the, like, not just the score itself, but anything to do with the sound design?
I would say that, like, I was expecting it, but of course, like, the first thing I hear is synth in the opening. It's pure 80s. We're getting exactly what I thought we were getting. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was great. I mean, I think it was what it needed to be for the film.
James Horner's soundtrack for Star Trek II and The Terminator, partly the same soundtrack, actually. He just sold it to two people. The same song that you hear from Star Trek II and Terminator, they use his music in the trailer for Running Man. So I thought that was interesting. I found that interesting.
I did read that one of the trailers used an unused cue that was intended for the dropship scene in Aliens.
That all fits together then.
The movie itself, it's not got much of a legacy other than the remake that's coming out, but I don't think that's anything really to do with this movie. Other than that, there was a couple of things that's just related to video games. I mean, it had its own adaptation in 89, which came out on the Commodore 64, the Atari ST, Commodore Amiga, ZX Spectrum. And then the year after, the 1990 video game Smash TV apparently was inspired by this movie. But other than that, there's really not much to go at. So yeah, before we move on, is there anything anybody wanted to bring up that you think we may or may not have touched upon that you wanted to have your say on it?
I know we don't technically do favourite lines, but my favourite line in the movie is why I picked this avatar. It is definitely when Maria's character says, "I'm going to throw up on you," and Arnold just replies, "Go ahead, it won't show on this shirt."
That is a really good line, I have to say.
I guess he had to split "might be mine" because it didn't happen when he did the kill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, it was literally in another scene when someone just references the other bad dude. "Hey, what happened to Hacksaw?" or whatever. It's just like, oh, he had to split. Like, come on.
Cool. What about you, John? Anything?
Yeah, like I said earlier, the exchange between Richard Dawson and him, he uses the "I'll be back." By the way, is that the first time somebody has made fun of their own line from another film?
I did read that it wasn't scripted, that it was supposed to be back for you. But then when "I'll be back" became a thing, Schwarzenegger changed it to that.
Wondered if that had ever been done in a movie before, that their own catchphrase from a previous film was used in another movie.
I don't think so. I think "I'll be back" was probably the first example. It wasn't scripted in the Terminator either, by the way. It was scripted as "I'll come back" even in that scene, and Arnold just improvised "I'll be back."
So what is it about this film that makes you come back to it, John?
Nostalgia. I think it boils down to that. And it's just, for me, it's a lark. I do have trouble with some of the PC stuff, but I guess I've gotten used to that with Star Trek, so the original series. You know, you kind of have to kind of wince and say, okay, it was the times. But for me, I just, it's just a kind of a fun popcorn film.
Cool. I've got to say, it's something that, you know, it can be fun after a couple of beers with friends. It's got colorful characters. It is like watching wrestling from that era for me. Mm-hmm. What about you, Whaley?
It's partial nostalgia, and part that it's, you know, it is a lark, it is a romp, it's just a silly fun time. And like, would I watch it by myself intentionally? Like, I need to watch this again? Probably not. Get a group of friends, drinking or not, and stuff like that to watch it. That then it becomes more fun, and it definitely becomes something to watch again.
That's fair. You know, it would be a fun. You know what? This movie would be a fun. Arena movie, like not as good as, of course,
you're thinking of Rocky Horror or something like that.
Yes. Well, I mean, I can see you having friends over and we shout out, you know, stuff.
It would be more towards like The Room than Rocky Horror, but
yeah. I'm telling you, there's a fantastic drinking game waiting to happen if you just double bill this with Batman and Robin and take a drink anytime Arnie makes a pun.
Yeah.
Yes,
people will be dead.
Yeah.
So what about you, Mike? I mean, without giving too much away for your final thoughts, do you think it's something that you'll be coming back to frequently, or is it just kind of a one and done for a good while?
I wouldn't be averse to revisiting it, but I think I probably would end up feeling very similar to Michael Whaley. It's not something I would necessarily be like, oh, I want to watch a movie, let's chuck this on. But if I was to have people around and wanted to have a laugh, or was getting, you know, having a few beers, or if I was happening to want to ever do like an Arnie retrospective and go through every Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, I certainly wouldn't skip it, you know, just for a bit of fun. And I mean, I can see myself enjoying it well enough. It's not something where it's unwatchable or I was like having a terrible time, but yeah, it certainly isn't one that I watch for kind of cinematic value.
That's fair enough. Well, I mean, we'll come to our final thoughts in a few moments, but before then, we'll be going to our regular feedback expert, Vianne, to hear what you out there think. So, Yeah, Vianne, what's the verdict on this one from our listeners?
Lots of interesting feedback on Running Man, not to be confused with Running Woman, which is what I thought at first, which, if you haven't seen it, is a terrible ripoff of The Fugitive with the genders swapped out, but it is starring the great Andrew J. Robinson. So if you haven't seen it, maybe not worth a watch, but definitely wouldn't get this kind of feedback. So regarding Running Man... from the Northeast Retro Den, a.k.a. Nerd, Facebook group, Kieran Bose says, one of my favorite films for its retro futurism, the action, and the one-liners, 5 out of 5, Luke Owen. My thoughts are one day this movie will be a documentary. I'm not sure I want to know the commentary on that. Also from Nerd, Ivan Lana, the movie details how the establishment uses hope as a tool of compliance when there is none and that society is designed to fail. It's a strong message, and the movie is definitely worth a watch, which puts the documentary comment into some interesting perspective. IIFI Repertory Theater Group's Tobias Nilsson says, classic 80s Arnie with cheesy one-line... Oh, it's an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Okay. Classic 80s Arnie with cheesy one-liners, over-the-top action, and super 80s aesthetic. Been a good long while since I last saw it, but remember it fondly, smiley face. Cinema of the 80s, Robert Moore says one of Arnold's best. My first time seeing an Arnold film was this on videotape back in England at my local video shop. Drink Cadre Cola. Lots of perspectives here, mostly from men, I'm noticing, and I'm wondering if that's a reference or a repercussion, I should say, of it being an action movie, but there are plenty of women who like a good action movie. From the 80s and 90s movies Facebook group, George Fremd, really a product of its time, ties in nicely with the larger-than-life wrestlers of the era. Johnny M., the book is phenomenal. I highly recommend reading it. Lots of praising for the book here. Pontus Omen agrees with John. Book is better, but the movie is a good action thriller as well. Cinema of the 80s again. Chris Edwards' great Arnie movie. And Peter Ferrigno, highly enjoyable, but obviously lacks the chops tension of Arnie's two other big 80s sci-fi hits, Predator and Terminator. Score, say, 3.5 out of 5. Yeah, a lot of guys really into this movie. Not one I'm familiar with. I didn't even know it was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, as I stated, but... Yeah, a lot of favorable impressions here. So back to you, DK.
Great stuff. Thanks, Vianne. And thank you to you out there for letting us know what you think. And as always, if you feel you missed out, drop us a line on our socials or in the comments below and let us know your thoughts. So with that taken care of, it's time to wrap this thing up, which obviously means it's final thoughts from us and score time. Come on, folks. If you've been with us before, you know how this works. And if not, then you'll quickly figure it out. And as always, we'll begin with our guest. So, Whaley, I'm coming to you first on this one. Let's hear your summation on 87's Running Man.
The Running Man is a fun movie. Like, it's ridiculous on all sorts of levels, but at the end of the day, it's worth watching. And I will watch it again, you know, in a group setting. But I'd probably give it 3.5 out of 5.
Fair enough. John?
I also give it a 3.5. I don't really have a whole lot to add. I'm sorry. I just, you know, it's just typical 80s Schwarzenegger. Not nearly as good as Predator, but fun.
Fair enough. Mike, have you got your usual dissertation?
Absolutely. I was going to say it's fine that you don't have much to add because I've more than got you covered with this long-winded ass conclusion.
I'll do mine first and then, you know, hand it over to you. I said earlier, but as much as I love Schwarzenegger from this iconic period, this one's a little lightweight. It feels like it wants to be the Terminator, but it's just not. It's very low budget, and despite some decent performances from some of the cast members, it does get a little, how should we say, panto in the hands of others. It can be forgiven for not taking itself too seriously, but that, coupled with to me, over-reliance on stereotypical Schwarzenegger quips during the action sequences and a very limited setup, it's more one for the kids in the schoolyard than any serious film watcher. It's light, it's breezy, it's a cult movie, but for me, it's far from a classic, and it's one of the lower-tier Arnie vehicles, and I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay. Ironically, this film is entertaining and fun, but ultimately a disposable, toothless product. In a way, it could have worked as its own bit of meta commentary if it weren't so obvious how amateurish much of what's on screen really is. I don't think I've ever seen a big popular Hollywood movie so poorly directed. More than once, I actually winced at jarring shot choices, clumsy overdubbing, dialogue being cut mid-scene, sloppy transitions, and an overall blandness that often made it look like a low-budget knockoff. Credit where it's due, though, the stunt performers, choreographers, effects teams, and a good handful of the actors do manage to elevate things above the mess. The whole production screams 1980s, which is strange for a film set in the supposed future, but it does add a kind of cheesy charm if you're willing to lean into it. Less fun, however, are the dated gender politics. Our so-called hero threatens and kidnaps a woman who then promptly falls for him. Yikes. There are not one but three bad taste sexual assault jokes, and of course women are largely absent in this macho 80s action fest. On the brighter side, Richard Dawson's turn as the arch-villain is brilliant, sharp, charismatic, and a real highlight. It's a shame he's barely known over here, because the performance probably deserves more recognition. Schwarzenegger is firmly in his Arnie persona mode, which you'll either love or hate. Personally, I'm on the love side, and I enjoy the familiar tropes. Maria Conchita Alonso does solid work despite the thin material, and some of the supporting players bring real spark too, no pun intended. The story itself is engaging with moments of amusement, energy, and even the occasional stab at social commentary. Not exactly a cinematic great, but good enough not to have me reaching for the remote. I also gave it 3 out of 5, DK. So,
fair enough. So, yeah, that brings the final score, if you concur, Mike, to 3.25 out of 5. Is that right?
3.25, exactly. That's what I've got, yep.
Nice one, which I think is fairly respectable for this one. What do you guys think?
Yeah,
I'm pleased.
Nice one. I honestly thought it was going to be much worse, so I'm glad it's got champions. So, yeah, that's it for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time with us here today discussing this one. And it's made you enthused to go watch the movie once again before checking out the new adaptation. Well, you're welcome. All that's left is for me to thank my guests for joining me here today. So, first of all, John, thanks, dude. I really appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much. I've really enjoyed it. God, I really
Great. Have. I did mention Phoenix Photography earlier in the show, but is there anything else that you want to draw the listeners' attention to or where they can find you?
I kind of would, actually. I've just been made creative consultant for a Star Trek talk show on television. It's not a podcast, called A Captain's Log. They're in their 5th season now. And I'm now the creative consultant for the show. And season 6, I just want to promo that we're having a lot of current folks from Strange New Worlds that are going to be on the show. And so I'm just so thrilled. Thank you, Lulu. So I'm thrilled about that. So something kind of a dream come true for me.
Nice one. So what channel is that on?
It's on about 35 different satellite stations, is on our site. You can go on. We also have a dedicated YouTube channel. So like a month after the shows air, they come onto that. And that's at the Captain's Log Show on YouTube.
Nice one. Whaley, thanks as ever, man.
Of course, man. Love being on this.
Good. You had a good time on this one, yeah?
Oh, yeah, always. It's always fun to talk about old movies, good or bad.
Anything you're up to out there in the social sphere? Any projects you'd like to draw attention to?
I don't have any current projects. We're in post-production on a feature called Don't Bury the Dead, which is still a ways away from being out there anywhere. Something you can throw in there is I'm launching my photography business and page. I already do videography stuff, but times be tough. I need to make more money. So I can get you guys the link to go to it, but it's a CM Whaley Photography. I'll be getting that up and running. It'll definitely be out by the time this episode airs. So
cool.
You can also find me on, as always, Michael Whaley on TikTok and Instagram. And I think same as on Blue Sky and Threads.
Nice one. As always, we'll get the links in. So, and yeah, we've got our socials for this show, but is there anything coming up on Silver Screen Regular or Silver Screen Cinema Classics you want to make people aware of, Mike?
Yeah, well, next Saturday, Cinema Classics, my particular show, will be following the Yellow Brick Road ahead of the release of Wicked for Good. A few days later, we are doing another of our Hit or Miss Doctor Who episodes, just in time for the actual anniversary day of Doctor Who, actually. dealing with a very appropriate Dalek episode that may or may not be set on that day. And then a few days before that, where Silver Screen regular Flavor will be chilling out with Matthew Broderick on Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And there's more coming than that, but that's just what's in the immediate future.
Well, as far as Cult Classics is concerned, we'll be back next month for one final episode this season, as I'm joined once more by Mike and, a few people, actually. We've got some returning guests join us for a little festive party as we take a look at the fellow 1987 movie, The Lost Boys. And that promises to be a fun, if a little packed one. So join us on that first Tuesday in December, where we'll all be saying hello to the night. So, from all of us here at Cult Classics, stay safe, and we'll hopefully see you soon. Until then, I've got to go score some steroids. So, good night.
You have been listening to the Cult Classics Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast. Created, written, and hosted by DK. Editing by Nick. Produced by Mike Wilson. Feedback section produced by Lady Vienne. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. This has been a Mad Badger production for the Media Matters Podcast Network. Copyright 2024. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.